Here comes the 307th edition of Uncle Don's Porcupine Petting Zoo at 88.7 FM in Prince George. Shame on Stephen Harper. Again, he has shown disdain for the laws of the land, and this time it was international law. Prominent lawyers and politicians demanded that Canada do its duty last week in Calgary by arresting a man accused of serious war crimes and crimes against humanity. Instead, George Wanker Bush was given royal treatment and Canadian government protection when he arrived in Calgary to dispense $400,000 worth of platitudes to 1,500 right-wing admirers. There are few cities left where this despicable criminal can expect a welcome, and we should all be ashamed that one of them is in Canada. Let him come to Prince George and we'll bury the bugger in shoes, believe me. My goodness, aren't we getting a flood of reports on Campbell's coming Olympics? Those who thought this party could happen without great social repercussions are having their heads pulled out of the sand. Lower mainland traffic will be a mess. Local businesses may as well close their doors for the duration. Vancouver's credit rating has dropped as it takes on a massive burden in a huge residential complex. On and on comes the news. Now we find that BC's court system, already tied in knots, will be virtually shut down for 10 weeks. Police won't be available to testify in criminal and traffic cases because they'll be stretched to the limit with temporary Olympic duties. What a screw-up. Already backlogged with cases, the courts are about to suffer gridlock mimicking Vancouver traffic. Could this cascade of messes have been foreseen? Of course. All the Pollyannas had to do was look at past Olympics and recognize the pattern. Cost overruns, massive debt, displacement of the poor, disruption of business, transportation chaos. It's all happened before and will again. If you think Vancouver Whistler will be a screw-up, wait for 2012 in London. Then we get to see how Russia handles the fiasco in 2014. Most of you have a precious freedom that I do not. You can walk into any casino in the province and put your money down on the tables or into the slots. I am, alas, prohibited from doing so on pain of exclusion and fines. 25 months ago, I tested the self-exclusion program offered by gambling joints in BC as a sop to those who thought the damage that gambling does to individuals. Anyone claiming to have a problem with wagering can front up at a casino and demand exclusion. The volunteer is escorted by a goon to a back room where he or she gives particulars of self. Photographs are taken, signatures secured, and then stern admonitions given. The self-proclaimed addict is then escorted to the door and given a symbolic bum's rush into the environment. I recommend the process to anyone who relishes a half hour of sport with pompous suits. It's free and it's fun. And by the way, it removes any future temptation to blow your money on this type of foolishness. Where is a poor millionaire to stash his money with all assets sliding in value? The president of Giraffe Capital Corporation has some suggestions. He predicts wars. Nuclear-armed Pakistan is sliding toward chaos. Odds are good that Israel, with quiet American blessing, will attack Iran. Nations that cannot feed themselves may well fight over food, space, and water. In a word, the world is going to hell in a handbasket. As our good leaders say, what good is a crisis if you can't make a buck from it? Giraffe Capital foresees war causing spikes in the price of oil and gold, so put your money into these products or their producers. He also believes cash would be well invested in America's merchants of death, the manufacturers of armaments. As they say in the 60s, war is good business. Invest your son. Good news, bad news. The good news is that Obama's administration has ceased calling prisoners in Guantanamo enemy combatants and pledges to adhere to international law henceforth. The bad news is the U.S. Justice Department is arguing in court that prisoners claiming to have been tortured by Americans should not be allowed to bring suit against government officials who authorized such treatment. Their argument, so help me, is that holding military officials liable could cause them to make future decisions based on fear of litigation rather than military policies. Excuse me, but isn't that what international law is supposed to do? What's the argument? Harper's minority government persuaded the Liberal opposition to pass its multi-billion-dollar stimulus bill by claiming that delaying it for Senate examination would hurt the little guys. Fat lot these clowns cared for little guys as they packed this massive bill with goodies for their wealthy friends. This bill is loaded with time bombs. For instance, changes to the Canadian Environmental Assessment Act would eliminate scrutiny of some 95% of projects currently covered. Necessary for rapid stimulus, says Environment Minister Jim Prentice, manure. The legislation this government is sidestepping was brought in by none other than Brian Mulroney to protect Canadian ecology from ill-conceived development. Might Harper's boys be taking a page from the book of the unlamented George Wanker Bush? Do they believe that caring for our physical heritage is unnecessary since Jesus is coming to take charge and make everything right? I don't know. Perhaps I should ask Stockwell Day. Suppose Canadians declared that all members of the Anglican Church were subversives and should be deported to England. Suppose further they were forbidden from owning land or even renting homes in areas controlled by non-aliens. And their lands were confiscated. They were forced into ghettos behind high walls while commerce with these areas was prohibited and occasional pogroms intruded, killing their citizens and destroying their infrastructure. Could Canada claim to be a democracy? It should be obvious where I'm going here. Why do we blindly support Israel and continue to call it a democracy? There's a growing internal movement to expel their Arab citizens, citizens who used to be a majority in their own land before the mass immigration of Zionists. The opinion of ideological right-wingers notwithstanding, Israel is a pariah state. As we direct attention to Iran claiming that it wants to build a nuclear bomb, Israel has hundreds of such bombs ready for delivery onto their neighbors. This rogue nation exists through our support and generosity. Like any dependent, it could be forced to adhere to civilized standards, recognizing the rights of all its citizens. We condemn Saudi Arabia for denying rights to non-Muslims. Why can't we do the same to us? I recall a WAG's definition of tolerance as putting up with the intolerable, which is cute but off the mark. To me, tolerance is overlooking the inconsequential. Taken to its extreme, intolerance on my part would mean that I have no friends except those exactly like me, making for small, intimate social occasions, and perhaps a marriage made in hell. I try not to prejudge people by skin tone, stature, age, gender, or opinions. I do, however, have friends and acquaintances much unlike myself. A long-standing friend is a Roman Catholic priest, with whom I get along fine as long as we skirt religious discussions. An old roommate in college was so far right as to brush against fascism while I was a deep pink socialist. We fought endlessly and are still great, if distant, friends. So tolerance is fine when differences are inconsequential, but tolerance is a vice when extended to incompetence. I don't care if the guy who serves me a meal is a fascist or communist as long as he does his job well. The mechanic who works on my car might be black, white, red, or yellow as long as she is competent. I want a doctor who understands the human body and how to attend to its maintenance, and his or her sexual orientation has no bearing on that. Then there are politicians. I can respect and tolerate a pretty wide band of the political spectrum as long as those in power are acting for the public good. I have no use for the incompetent nor, as in the case at hand, those who place them in position to exploit the public good for the benefit of followers. If you've been following the news, you may be ahead of me on this one. The man appointed by our minority prime minister to be Canada's Minister of State for Science and Technology refuses to declare that he believes in evolution. Science minister, mind you, not minister in charge of filling potholes or taking out the garbage. Declaring that you don't believe in evolution is akin to say you don't believe in gravity. Here we have a person in charge of doling out millions of our dollars in the name of scientific research who can't accept one of the best established basic facts of biological science. In subsequent interviews, he tried to paper over his superstitious rejection of evolution by saying, quote, "We are evolving every year, every decade. That's a fact. Whether it's the intensity of the sun or whether it is, too, as a chiropractor, walking on cement versus anything else, whether it's running shoes or high heels, of course we're evolving to our environment," close quote. This man not only fails to accept biological evolution, he doesn't even understand the concept. We do not evolve to high heels or sun exposure. We adjust as individuals, which is a far cry from intergenerational changes in DNA constituting evolution. This man is a goof. Putting such a person in charge of our government's support of science is like putting a flat earther in charge of foreign affairs or a witch doctor in the post the head of social health services. And what does it say about the Prime Minister who made the appointment? I leave that to you. As a serial owner of four Volvos, I was chagrined when the company was sold to Ford. Oh, the humiliation. Volvo's new owner had grand plans for these iconic vehicles. One executive was candid as to what they intended to do when he sneered, "Look at this logo. It looks like a stick of gum." As they said in the ads, Ford had a better idea. Their better idea was to cheapen the components, revamp the logo, and redesign Volvo's products in accord with the North American philosophy that cars should be styled from the outside in. Ford blew it, and Volvo is now for sale again. A prospective buyer is Geely Holding Group of China. If Chinese buy this company, what will they do with it? They might move manufacturing from Sweden to China, or they could keep facilities in Scandinavia and change the corporate philosophy. I'd like to see Volvo return to its roots, producing the safest vehicles on the road, designed from the passenger compartment and engine space with a shell fitted around it. The old 240 models were boxy, but visibility was good and seating comfortable. One great advantage was that they were seldom targets of thieves. Most kids wouldn't be seen dead driving one. It pains me to say something good about James Moore, UNBC alumnus and present Minister of Heritage, but sometimes I must rise above my principles and do what I think is right. James put his finger on it when he said, quote, "The reason that taxpayers provide a subsidy to the CBC is to give each Canadian in every part of the country and in both official languages the opportunity to see Canadian news, stories, and dramas. I don't like it when I see the CBC canceling Canadian content and we see Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune," close quote. Our very own public broadcaster has taken a portion of its billion-dollar public subsidy and paid for these two American shows, hoping that drooling masses watching them will be too lazy to change channels and will be thus exposed to Canadian content following. I have watched neither Jeopardy nor Wheel of Fortune. I have never, for that matter, watched CBC nor any other Canadian television. It's just not a part of my life, but I believe that CBC TV is valuable as a vehicle for cementing the Canadian identity. As such, it should not be just another television channel relying on advertising for support. I would have no objection to an increase in my taxes if it would pay for an ad-free channels carrying Canadian content, although I would not be tempted to watch it. I'm a devoted listener to CBC Radio, and of course CFUR, and I welcome most of its news and programming. I would hate to see it go the way of our current CBC TV, carrying foreign programming and, horror of horrors, advertising. Having placed James Moore on a pedestal, however small, I must now give his plinth a healthy kick. This Minister of Heritage has frozen the annual subsidy to the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, even while he acknowledges the value of this institution to Canadian social cohesiveness. This, in the face of falling advertising revenues for the television wing of CBC. So times are tough, times are hard, and everyone has to bite the bullet, eh? Well, not everyone, and certainly not the poor private purveyors of news, entertainment, advertising, and propaganda. Ken West Global and its flagship publication, The National Post, are teetering on the brink of bankruptcy. As with so many corporate conglomerates, Ken West sits under a blanket of debt due to its rapid expansion, gobbling up competitors while issuing junk bonds. Interest payments on their borrowings, coupled with decline in revenues, has Ken West on the ropes. They, and so many other media companies, are victims of their greed and poor planning. So, is James Moore telling them, as it has our own broadcast company, to lump it? Not likely. Moore's government is planning changes in taxation and regulations to ease the pain for broadcasting and publishing conglomerates. Anything for the precious private sector while letting public enterprises twist in the wind. Harper is reputed to have said that the current financial crisis should not go to waste. Indeed, he and his minions use our pain to further their dubious right-wing agenda any way they can. This is CFUR at 88.7 FM in Prince George. I've long believed that you could replace all the esoteric precepts of religious morality with a simple golden rule: do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Of course, if we adopted that universally, who had put a whole fleet of preachers, rabbis, imams, priests, and other religious hangers-on out of work. Well, they could get jobs at General Motors or Dow Chemical, eh? There's another pithy aphorism that was popular during the Great Depression, the last depression, that is. It is, use things well. How apt that short expression is again in 2009. It implies that we should use our possessions with care. It harkens back to the wartime admonition, use it up, wear it out, make it do or do without. To me, this means don't buy what you don't need. When you have it, use it carefully and thoroughly. When you have no use for it, find someone who does or recycle it. These three simple words could be extended to finances. If you need credit, use it well and not for foolishness. If you have savings, use them well by husbanding them carefully and not risking what you cannot afford to lose. Following this simple bit of wisdom could have saved society from the financial bubble and its inevitable collapse. Have we learned our lessons? Oh, yes. Until the next time. Urban legend has it that a legislature of the American South once passed a bill declaring that pi would be valued at exactly 3, as elementary students were having trouble with this odd number. This anecdote is apocryphal, but it's an amusing way of illustrating some of the peculiar legislation in that geographical area. The idea of a non-repeating decimal seems inconceivable, but in 2002, a computer calculated pi to 1.24 trillion places with no pattern. That was probably an adequate sample to prove the hypothesis. At one time, my brother applied himself to memorizing pi and mastered 100 places. He looked in Guinness to see if it achieved a record. At that time, he was a full 900 decimals short. Since then, in 2006, a Japanese recited pi to 100,000 decimal places. He made no indication of how he would apply his knowledge. I guess it was just a hobby. An American official announced authoritatively that Iran now has enough uranium to build a bomb. This got front page coverage and led to radio news reports. Technically, he was right. By the same standard, you could say that Saskatchewan has enough for 10,000 bombs. Iran's uranium, like Saskatchewan's, is not purified to remove much of the U-238. For uranium to be bomb-grade, it must have a high purity of the U-235 isotope. This is technically difficult, time-consuming, and expensive. Congress was told recently that Iran does not have highly enriched uranium. Theirs is merely the rough stuff that can fuel nuclear reactors for power. This information came from the U.S. National Intelligence Director and the Defense Intelligence Agency Director, contradicting hysterical anti-Iran propaganda emanating from Israel. And where, pray tell, was this momentous announcement presented by Canada's national newspaper? In a small two-paragraph box at the bottom of page 11 of its news section. It is not sufficient for the media merely to tell us the truth, but it must be presented where and when the public will be aware of it. In the mid-70s, Prince George had an institution which has, unfortunately, passed away. This was the Andrist Family Auction, a weekly celebration of basic recycling. Held at the Hickson Roller Dome, it assembled a fascinating bunch of locals selling and buying, well, mostly junk. After attending a few of these auctions, I began to notice the similarity of lots. It was common for people to submit mixed boxes of junk. These accumulations of electrical, plumbing, auto parts, and unrecognizable bits went under the hammer rapidly, usually bringing $2. I soon determined that people would spot a bit or two of useful stuff in a box of assorted rubbish and buy the lot. Then they would throw some of their own detritus in with the rest and resubmit it the next week to again go for $2. The Andrist family didn't mind as long as they took a cut every time it went around. At one auction, an old dryer was up next. A family member stood by the machine while his kin solicited bids. The shill looked in the dryer and declared there were clothes in it. "Are they dry?" asked the auctioneer. "Yes," said the shill. "Works good. How much am I offered?" For those who did not buy or sell, it was a spectator sport, drawing all the local characters. I miss those auctions. They were occasions for some good grassroots recycling and free entertainment to boot. Pope Ratzinger has the temerity to tell Africans that condoms contribute to spreading AIDS. He went out on a limb on this one. His apparent reasoning was that condoms encourage promiscuity, and promiscuity with condoms will lead to promiscuity without them. Lacking protection, fear of disease would encourage chastity. I might expect such rubbish from a celibate old man. By the same token, I suggest that, by granting absolution of sins, the Roman Catholic Church encourages crime. If it's divinely forgiven, why not do it again? The Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission has given permission for yet another specialty television channel. This French-language channel will broadcast paid obituaries and notices of illness. As with those notices in newspapers, the station will charge the bereaved for posting testimonials. They will possibly include sound, music, photos, video, and text in memoriam of loved ones passed on to the next world. I want those of you not driving or operating heavy machinery to close your eyes. There you go. Now, visualize the person motivated to sit in a darkened room, riveted on the obituary channel. Weird, eh? Will there be those who get their jollies from news of sickness and death? Could this new channel divert some viewers from soft porn? Cogitate on this one. Sikorsky helicopters are in the news. It was one of their machines that dumped in the North Atlantic, killing workers on their way to an oil platform. It was Sikorsky winning the contract for Cyclone helicopters to replace our old, undependable Sea King choppers for the Canadian Armed Forces. The guaranteed delivery date was 2008. Take a look. They aren't here, and they aren't in storage along with our Leopard 2 tanks. So what happened? This $5 billion contract was awarded over the bid of a rival, Augusta Westland. A subsequent lawsuit against the Canadian government by the loser claimed that the contract was wrongly awarded based on false promises of delivery dates. It transpired that the 2008 promise was hollow, as the Cyclone was still in the planning stages and no guarantees could have been certain. By the merest of coincidences and without explanation, Augusta Westland dropped its suit just 2 days before Sikorsky informed the federal government that it would be 30 months late in delivering the goods. Interesting timing, eh? What prompted the losing bidder to abandon a legal case with solid grounds? One might suspect that favors or assets changed hands, but we may never know. The contract with Sikorsky included penalties of up to $36 million for failure to meet delivery dates. So our federal government will collect a handy windfall for exposing our troops to added danger in flying the condemned Sea Kings, right? Don't bet on it. Penalties have been waived, while we will pay an extra $117 million to Sikorsky for additional, quote, leading-edge technology. And who is in the thick of the negotiations on this fiasco? None other than Canada's leading resident betrayer of trust, Peter MacKay. Case closed. There are several ways that purchase of new automobiles can be encouraged by governments. Harper's considering the German method, that is, giving serious money to people scrapping old vehicles and purchasing new ones. It can work in a way, but is quite expensive, and many people taking advantage of the giveaway would have disposed of their old vehicles anyway. What makes more sense from many angles is the Japanese system. Japan requires stringent annual vehicle inspections. Those failing cannot be registered. As a result, there are very few old ones on Japanese roads. When I lived in New Jersey, the state required rigorous annual vehicle inspections akin to Japan's. These were for safety, as emissions were not yet an issue. Urban British Columbia had inspection stations in the 70s when I lived in Victoria. I drove my car to a government facility each year where the brakes, lights, tires, and other features were carefully checked. Rural vehicles were not tested, as was obvious from the junk I saw on the road once I left the Lower Mainland. The Social Credit government, bless them all, rather than extending testing to the whole province, closed inspection stations and fired employees, saving their precious FTEs. It was typical of their pandering to know-nothings while sacrificing public safety. We see the legacy of testing abolition every day. Look at the number of cars, trucks, and even buses with burnt-out lights. If headlights are neglected, what chance is there that brakes and tires are also? British Columbians pay for this neglect with traffic accidents, the resulting injuries and deaths. And don't get me started on the closing of weight scales and truck inspections. Canada could easily get old, unsafe vehicles off our roads while stimulating the auto industry by bringing in a nationwide system of inspections with uniform standards. And to be effective, it would have to be nationwide, or the rejects from one province would just be shifted to another with lower or no standards. Of course, if Harper's Bunch were to bring in such a reform, it would surely be as one of his damned P3s, turning responsibility over to private inspectors as an ineffective cash cow and pain for auto owners. I was exposed to a privatized inspection system on a visit to North Carolina. My mother asked me to take her car for its annual checkup at the local licensed service station. After paying $10 to a supposed mechanic, he asked me to turn on the headlights, turn signals, try the brake lights. He then took a checklist and went down it mechanically, certifying tires, brakes, window glass, and the whole magilla. I asked him if he wasn't going to check all these things, and he seemed surprised. "You having any troubles?" he asked. "No," said I. "Then it's all right." If we have private inspections, maybe N-Corp could take over the task. This is the outfit receiving a mandatory recycling fee tacked onto electronics sales while making it difficult to return these items when their life is over. The result is that the company takes the money and the dump takes the discarded toxic waste. If we had a privatized system, we could expect the same neglect and graft. Let's have universal vehicle inspections, but have it done in public installations by government employees. Here come four more Canadian soldiers, boxed like chocolates and wrapped in flags, returning to their mourning families. At one time, we were perplexed by the question of why we spend billions of dollars and so many Canadian lives in a losing war against a people in a far country who don't want us. Now we know why we are paying these prices. It's to further the ambition of Peter MacKay, Canada's Minister of War, to be appointed to head NATO. Well, he's a brave man, and he can bear up under the sacrifices. This ends the 307th edition of my Porcupine Petting Zoo. The station is CFUR at 88.7 FM in Prince George. Thomas Jefferson is revered, at least in the States, but his writings are carefully ignored. He once wrote, quote, "We discover in the Gospels a groundwork of vulgar ignorance, of things impossible, of superstition, fanaticism, and fabrication," unquote. Amen. Eh?